Good day, everyone, and welcome to the DB2 Chat with the Lab Series conference call. Today's call is being recorded. There is a PowerPoint presentation of charts. If you do not have the charts, you can download them from ibm.com/db2/labchat. Again, that is ibm.com/db2/labchat. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Sal Vella, the Vice President of Development for DB2 for Linux, Unix, Windows, and Business Intelligence. Please go ahead, sir.
I'm very happy to be hosting this DB2 chat with the lab. This is the seventh in our series of calls. I want to thank everyone for joining us on this call. I also want to acknowledge the support of IDUG, the International DB2 Users Group, in getting the word out for this call. We're beginning to see the first customers start moving into production with DB2.9. Upgrades to DB2.9 have been smooth, and we have many more customers in various stages of development and test. We continue to get some great reviews of technology, such as deep compression, as more customers try it on their own data. We're also seeing continued great interest in our Pure XML support. As vendors roll out their products that include Pure XML, and early adopters begin to go into production. Next week is the Information on Demand conference in Anaheim, California. We will have a number of customers telling their stories about implementations with DB2.9. We'll have a securities company talking about their work with Pure XML, and an insurance company will be talking about their experience with DB2.9. If you're attending the Information on Demand conference, I would encourage you to sign up for these sessions. And I would personally also like to get your feedback during the conference as well. Today's chat with the lab will focus on one of the security features of DB2.9, label-based access control, or LBAC for short. Label-based access control is a security feature introduced in the DB2.9 release. With LBAC, administrators can control read and write access of a user at the table, column, and row level. So as an example, if you've got a table with salary information, you may want to have different levels of access. General access can be granted for HR, for example, who can see all except the executive information. Executive to be able to see executive and non-executive information, but cannot see the CEO's compensation. And CEO can view all of the information. So LBAC provides a flexible way to provide fine-grained access control to the data in your data server. I'd like to introduce the presenter for today, who will tell you more about our LBAC capabilities in DB2.9. Waleed Rajabi is a senior DB2 software engineer based in the IBM Toronto Software Lab. Waleed was one of the technical leads in the development of the label-based access control feature in DB2.9. Waleed has been a member of the DB2 development team for over 10 years and is helping to drive the overall security strategy for DB2. Many thanks again and enjoy the presentation.
I'd like to welcome you to this presentation about label-based access control. I hope everyone has the chart in front of them. I'm currently on chart number 2, which says agenda. So the presentation will cover 3 main parts. So the first part would be sort of the introduction to LBAC and show how it works, how it can be set up. The second, this is the first 4 bullets that you see. And then the second part will focus on how LBAC integrates with the rest of the database functionality and database features. And then the last part will talk about the extensions that have been made to the DB2 security model to sort of improve the overall DB2/LBAC offer. And then I'll summarize. So I'm moving to chart number 3. So label-based access control is an implementation of mandatory access control. And in the context of database systems, LBAC is generally referred to as the ability to control access to data rows based on security labels. Now, DB2 is not the first database system that has implemented label-based access control or mandatory access control. However, as you will see throughout this presentation, this is a novel implementation when compared to other implementations, and I'll explain what that means in the next chart. So, label-based access control does not replace the discretionary access control that already exists in the product. Rather, it complements it. So, when you have a table that is protected with LBAC, DB2 will enforce 2 levels of access control when that table is access. So the first is the traditional discretionary access control. Let's say, does Joe have access, has select access to this table? And the second is the label-based access control, which can be at the row level, at the column level, or at both. I am moving to chart number 4, and here I'd like to take a minute to explain why we believe that this is a novel implementation of mandatory access control compared to other implementations that have been there for over 20 years or more. So, mandatory access control is a security policy that came out of the U.S. Department of Defense, and one very well-known implementation of mandatory access control is called multi-level security. And in multi-level security, access control is based on security labels, but a security label is a rigid structure which implements the requirement of the U.S. Department of Defense. And this rigid structure says that a label is a structure that is composed of two pieces of information. The first piece of information is what is referred to as level, and this generally tells us about the sensitivity of the data. This data is secret or top secret or unclassified. And then the second piece of information is what is called compartment, and this tells us about the categories to which belongs this sensitive data. For example, this is a top secret data that belongs to the category Air Force. This is a secret data that belongs to the category Navy, for example. And all implementations of mandatory access controls that are out there, be it on database system or an operating system or on web servers, etc., they strictly implement this semantic, this multi-level security semantic. When we were designing the LBAC solution for DB2, we realized that there are other governments around the world that also have requirement for access control based on security labels, but because they are foreign government, their understanding of what a security label does not necessarily match what is the understanding of the U.S. Department of Defense. So there are other Department of Defense for whom a security label could be more than just two components. It could be four or five components. And we also realized that there can be other usages for an access control based on security labels where there is no notion at all of a level component that tells us about secret, top secret, etc. For instance, you can imagine a scenario where somebody wants to base access control to rows in a table based on colors, for example. So you can say, okay, I have 10 rows in the table, 5 of them are red, 3 of them are yellow, and 2 of them are green, and I would like somebody who has a green label to see only the green rows, somebody who has green and yellow to see both the green and yellow rows. Another situation, you can imagine a pharmaceutical company where there are salespeople who sell drugs in a different geography, and you would like to have an access control model where salespeople can only see the drugs that they sell in their geographical region. This is again something that has nothing to do with the level component, which tells us about sensitivity of data in terms of secret, top secret, etc. For this, based on all of these observations, the LBAC solution in DB2 has been designed in such a way that the security administrator tells the system what the security label is going to look like, what's the structure of the security label, and then DB2 does all the magic to enforce access control based on that structure you have defined. So that's really the background for how DB2 came to this implementation, which we believe is a novel implementation of mandatory access control. So how does the security administrator set up and tell the system what the label is going to look like? This is what I will go through now in this chart. So we introduced the number of concepts that will allow the security administrator to set up a security policy with LBAC. So the first concept is what we call a security label component. And the security label component basically represents any criteria upon which you would like to base access control upon. And when the security administrator creates a security label component, they can choose from three predefined types of security label components, which are called array, set, and trees. So an array basically is an ordered set. So for example, you can define an array called level, and you say the elements in there are highly sensitive, confidential, and non-sensitive. And because it's an ordered set, there is an order implied which says basically that highly sensitive is greater than sensitive is greater than confidential, and so on. The next type of component is what we call sets, and this is just a mathematical set. So you can say I have four projects A, B, C, D, and I define a set like that. And the last type of component is what is called the tree. And a tree basically has a special semantics. And the best way to understand it is to think of a scenario where you have an organizational chart, and you have the vice president, for example, as a root, and you have director of finance as a child, and you have director of HR as another child. And the idea of trees is that if the director of finance can access some information, then so can the VP. So the basic idea is that if a child can access something, so can the parent. So these are the three types of security label components. The next concept is what we call a security policy. And the best way to understand what a security policy is to draw an analogy with a table schema. In the same way, a table schema tells us about the number of columns and the type of columns that make up a table, the security policy tells us about the number of components and the type of components that make up a security label from that specific policy. A security policy also tells us about the rules that are going to be applied when an object is protected by that specific security policy. And in DB2.9, we ship with a predefined set of rules that we call the DB2LBAC rules, and that's the only set of rules that is supported in DB2.9. And this DB2LBAC rule set is divided in two categories, the read access rules and the write access rules. So the read access rules apply whenever data is retrieved. Data can be retrieved, for example, on a select. Data is also retrieved on the fetch part of an update or a delete statement. And the write access rules apply when data is modified. And for example, when you insert data, the write access rules will be applied. And this is an example here showing the SQL that is used to create a security policy. So for example, here you are creating security policy. You are saying a label from that policy is going to be made of two components, one called level, one called project, which I have defined earlier. And the rules that will be used are the predefined DB2LBAC rules. And we will see the details of those a little later. I'm now moving to chart number 5. So when an object protected by a security policy is accessed, DB2 will apply the appropriate access rules based on the access type and the component type. So imagine we have a data object which is protected by some label, which we call the data label, and we have some user who has a label. So these two labels belong to the same security policy, which means that they have the same number of components, they have the same schema. And DB2 starts to look at the components one by one, starting with the first one. It looks at the first one, says, okay, what type is this component? Is it an array? Is it a set? Is it a tree? And based on that type, DB2 will select the appropriate rule and apply it, compare the values for those two components. If the access is granted, we move to the next component, and we move to the third component, and so on, until we have exhausted the components for that specific label. If the user passes all those checks, then access is granted. The moment you fail one, access is not granted, and there is no need to go any further. I'm now moving to chart number 6. And this is to describe the DB2LBAC rule set. So it is divided in two sets, the read access rule and the write access rule. And as you can see, the access rule names here, they have the type of component implied in the rule name. So for instance, if you are comparing two components of type array. For the read access operation, you would use the DB12 back read array. If you are comparing two components of type set, for a read access operation, you would use the DB12 back read set, and the same thing for the DB12 back read tree. If you are comparing them for a write access operation, you would use the DB12 back write rule for that, for either an array or a set or a tree, depending on the component. So what is the DB12 back read array? So the DB12 back read array basically says that you cannot see data for which the array component is higher than yours. So for example, if you are a sensitive and the data is protected with highly sensitive, you cannot access that data. You can only access sensitive and anything that is lower than that. The DB2L back read set basically says if you can access an object only if your set component includes the set component of the object. For example, going back to the color example I mentioned earlier, so if your component has the color red and blue, then you can access items that are blue, that are red, or that are red and blue. You cannot access items that are red, blue, and green, because your set does not include that set. And the DB2L back tree, as I mentioned earlier, it has the semantics that says that if a child has access to some information, then any parent or an ancestor of that child will also have access to that information. The DB2L back write rules are similar to the DB2L back read rules, except for the one that applies to the array component. And the one that applies for the array component says simply that you can only write at your array level. So for example, if you are sensitive, you cannot write information to non-sensitive, because by doing so, you will be declassifying information. And if you have a buddy of yours who has not a sensitive information, you can leak that information to them just by declassifying it. And you generally writing to levels that are higher than your level are allowed by other implementations of mandatory access control, but in DB2 we chose to control it because we believe that even though you are writing information to higher levels, you are not really declassifying it, but you might be writing information that is garbage just to mislead other people. So basically in DB2 you can only write at your array level, and if there is a reason for you to write outside of that level, you need additional privileges, and we will see later on what these are. I'm moving to chart number 7, and chart number 7 introduces the concept of a security label. So a security label is sort of the credential that allow you access to data protected with LBAC. So there are three types of security labels. They are all security labels, but they are just distinguished by who holds those labels. So there is a user security label. So this is the security label that the administrator grants to a user. There is a row security label. This is a security label protecting a row in a table. And there is a column security label, which is protecting a column as a whole. When the security administrator grants a security label to a user, they can choose to grant that label for read access, for write access, or for both read and write. And the flexibility here is there might be situations where there are some users who just have their job is just to generate reports. So there is no reason to grant them write access, to just grant them read access. Or there may be users who are just doing load. There is no reason to grant them read. You can just grant them write access. Also, this flexibility allow you to handle scenarios like the following. So suppose that there is a user Bob, and the security administrator would like Bob to read data with level S and compartment ABC, but only write data with compartment C. So the way to do that, the administrator will create two labels, L1 for read access, which has the level S and compartment ABC, and L2 for write access, which has level S and compartment only C. It means that if he tries to write data with A or B, he will not be able to do that. I'm moving to chart number 8, and a little earlier I mentioned that there are some additional capabilities that one can hold to bypass the DB2L back rules. So this is the concept of an exemption. And an exemption is basically a special privilege that allows the user to bypass a particular rule in the security policy. So you can choose, for example, to grant a user an exemption to be able to write to lower level than their array level. To do so, you say grant an exemption on the DB2 LBAC write array for write down. If you would like them to write to level higher than their array level, you would grant them an exemption on the DB2 LBAC write array for write up. So basically, when you grant somebody an exemption on a rule, that rule no longer applies to that specific user. I'm now moving to chart number 9, and on chart number 9 I'll introduce the concept of a protected table. So a protected table is just a table like any other table, but it is protected with LBAC. And there are two flavors of protected tables. There are the protected table with row-level granularity and protected table with column-level granularity. The key difference between protected tables and non-protected tables is the following. Traditionally, a database administrator has access to every table they want. So, for instance, you can have, you know, the database administrator of some famous bank in Canada to just do select on the payroll table and just find out what the executives are making. This is inherent to the traditional model. In tables that are protected with LBAC, no user, no matter what their authority is, be it a SecAdm, be it a DBAdm, be it a SysAdm, they cannot get access to a protected table unless they do have LBAC credentials. And even if they do have LBAC credentials, they only have access to what those LBAC credentials allow them to access. In other words, if you don't have a security label or exemption, there is no access granted to you for a protected table. Now, how do you create a protected table with row-level granularity? It's very easy. So it's just like another table, but you have to tell the system which column is going to contain your row security label column, and you do so by using the DB2 security label as the type of the column when you are defining the table. And you need to associate a security policy with that table. So as you see here on chart 9. And that security policy basically tells us about the rules that are going to be applied. So these are the DB2 LBAC rules. This is the only thing that is supported in version 9. It also tells us about what is the structure of the security label that you are going to be inserting into this table. So for example, if the structure says the label is made of one component and you are trying to insert a label that has 5 components, you will get an error because that does not match the structure that you have defined in the security policy associated with the table. I'm moving to chart 10. So on chart 10, there is the concept of a protected column. So a protected column is just a column to which you associate a security label, and that security label will control access to that column as a whole. And a table that has one or more protected tables is referred to as a protected table with column level granularity. So how do you associate a label with a column? You just use the secured with clause when you are defining a table, as you see on chart number 10. I'm now moving to chart number 11, and here I'm going to talk a little bit about how you provide the row security label value, for example, on an insert statement. So the row security label column is implicitly a not null with default column. It means that it cannot be null, and it means that it has a default. And the default here is different from the traditional static default that, for example, if you define a column of type integer and you say the default is 0, so when you do not specify 1, you get 0. That's what I would call a static default. The row security label column has what I would call a dynamic default, in the sense that when you are trying to insert a row and you do not provide a security label, the system will pick the security label of the user doing that insert and use that as the default value. So this is why it is a dynamic default. Aside from that, there are a couple of other ways to provide the security label when you are doing an insert statement, for example. So we're going to walk through some example here. So you are creating a table called T1, and A is your row security label column. So for instance, if you say insert into T1 values and you use the keyword default, the system will pick your security label for that insert statement. I'm moving to chart number 12. So another way of providing the security label is to use one of the built-in functions that we have. For instance, if somebody has created a security label and gave it a name, and you would like to use that name, you could use the setLabelByName function as part of your insert, and you provide the security label name. Another way is to use the setLabel function, and this is probably the best of all functions, in the sense that it does not require that a label has been created beforehand, or rather you can provide the label by means of the individual component value. So for instance here I'm saying I'm going to insert a row with a label where the level component is S and the project component is A, for example. I'm moving to chart 13. So how do you retrieve the security label on a select statement, for example? So the row security label is just a regular column with respect to accessing it. So for instance, if you say select star from the table, the row security label column will appear. But what you will see, the value that you will see for the row security label is DB2's internal representation of the security label. For fast query processing and for efficient evaluation of the access route, we store the security label in an internal representation that allows the evaluation of the security the security rules to be very efficient. And so if you just do a plain select on that column, you will see that internal representation, which may not be meaningful to the user. If you would like to see something that is human readable, you would want to use the setLabel to char function, which basically will convert the internal representation to the external representation, which will be mapping to the definitions that you have provided when you created your security label component. I'm moving to chart 14, and here I'm going to talk about a concept the concept of table level labeling. And this is, so there are situations and there are applications in different government organizations where there are tables where the data in that table is known to have the same security classification. But for security reasons, that table needs to be protected with mandatory access control. And because the only way of doing that is with other solutions is to associate a label with each row in the table. So for example, if you have, you know, table that has millions and millions of rows, you will be storing that same label millions and millions of times, and you will be using space, and you will also be incurring paying a performance penalty because of the security check at the row level. But what is really, really required here in those specific situations is just one sort of a check. Does the table is protected with, say, the sensitive label, and I would like to see if the user has sensitive, and if they do, I just want to grant them access to the table, and I don't want to do any more checks because I know that table never changes, and it is just data that I know is just sensitive there. Well, in DB2 LBAC, it is possible to simulate this sort of table level labeling by simply associating the same security label with every column in the table. And this was a very neat application of column level labeling, which one of our government customers was very, very pleased to see because of the savings in terms of storage and also the avoidance of the performance penalty. I'm moving to chart 15. So on chart 15, what else can you do with table level labeling? So table level labeling can also be useful even when applications do not really manage classified information. For instance, it can be leveraged to ensure that your database administrator cannot gain access to your favorite table. And this is the only way that you could do so today in DB2, preventing DB Adam access. Okay, so on chart 16, I'd like to show a simple example that sort of illustrates all the concepts that I've been talking about. And this is a very simple and classical row-level labeling example. So the example is simple in the sense we will just take situations where we have access control is based on labels that are just one component, so they are plain simple. So the first thing that I would do is I create a security label component, I give it a name, and it is of type array, for example, and I'm going to give the values in that array. So they are highly sensitive, confidential, and public. And as I said, there is an order implied here in an array component, meaning that the highly sensitive is greater than sensitive is greater than confidential, and public is the smallest. Then I create a security policy that is called data access, and I say that security labels from this policy will have one single component, which is called level, which I have defined earlier, and the DB2 rules that will be and the LBAC rules that will be applied are the DB2 LBAC rules, and as I mentioned, these are the only rules supported in version 9. So I then choose to create a security label called the manager security label, and I will set the level component in that label to sensitive. So the manager has a sensitive label, and then I will grant that manager security label to user Joe. Okay. Now I create a table called employee. It has four columns, and the first of those four columns is the row label column. It is of type DB2 security label, and I associate the security policy data access with that table. So my setup is pretty much done at this point. I'm moving to chart 17. So on chart 17, user Joe, who has been granted the sensitive label earlier, tries to do this insert statement. So he says insert into employee values, and he uses the default keyword for the row label column. As I mentioned earlier, the system will take Joe's security label and use it as part of that insert. So there will be one row injected, and the row label value will be sensitive. Now let's see if user Joe tries to do this insert statement. So he's trying to provide a label where the value is confidential. Because Joe is sensitive, that means that Joe is trying to attempt a write-down, and this will fail because Joe does not have credentials that allow him to write down. He can only write at his own level. Similarly, when Joe tries to write to highly sensitive, that statement will fail because that's a write-up as well, and Joe does not have the credential to write up. I'm moving to chart 18. Now let's say that Joe is a good user, and the security administrator chooses to grant him an exemption to write down. So that's the SQL that the security administrator would use to grant Joe the write down exemption. So if Joe now issues the SQL statement that failed earlier, where he provided a confidential value for the label, that statement will now succeed, and the table will contain, as you see, two rows, one which has a sensitive label and another one that has a confidential label. Now, suppose that there is another user called Nancy who has the exact same security label as Joe, which means that she has a sensitive label. She does not have any exemption. And Nancy tries to do this update statement. So she tries to set the department number to 66, where the department number equals 11. So obviously, there are two rows affected by that statement. So the question is, will that statement succeed or fail? Well, the first row is a sensitive row, which means that Nancy is allowed to write it. However, the second row is a confidential, and Nancy cannot write to confidential because she is sensitive and she does not have any exemption. So the write of the second row cannot succeed, and consequently the whole transaction, the whole update will fail. So Nancy's statement will fail. Now if we move to chart 19, and Nancy chooses to change her statement by adding an additional predicate and employee number equal 1, which means that she's really just after the first row that we have seen earlier, in this case, the statement succeeds because there is only one row affected by the update, and then she has right access to that sensitive label. Now, suppose that the security administrator creates and grants a new security label to user Alice. So he creates a security label called employee sec label, and it is a confidential security label, and he chooses to grant that security label to user Alice. So that's the SQL that can be used to do so. I'm moving to chart 20. Now suppose user Alice issues a select statement like the one you see, select star from employee. Now as far as Alice is concerned, the table contains one single row and it is the confidential row. Alice has absolutely no knowledge that other rows exist. As far as she is concerned, that's the reality. Now, if user Alice tries to do a delete statement, let's say she wants to delete everything, so she just say delete from employee. Now, if she does a select star from employee, there are no rows. But is the table really empty? Let's go to chart 21. Suppose that Joe does a select star from employee, the table is not empty. There is another row in there, which is the sensitive row that is visible to Joe, but it is not visible to Alice. So that's sort of an example, a simple example to illustrate how LBAC can be set up and how it works when it is set up. I'm now moving to chart number 22. And this is really the second part. Remember in the beginning I said there will be three parts. The first part is sort of showing how LBAC can be set up and how it can be used. And the second part is going to talk about how LBAC integrates with the rest of the database functionality. Because one needs to be careful when designing a security solution to make sure that security does not compromise the integrity of the database. And if one does not design things right, such problems can happen like they happened in other projects in the past. Now, this is an example to illustrate the problem. Suppose that there is a parent table called department that is protected with row-level granularity, and there is a child table called employee that is also protected with row-level granularity. Consider this scenario. User Bob attempts to delete a row from the parent table department for which a child row exists, but that child row is not visible to Bob according to the LBAC rules. Now, if the delete is allowed to go through, an orphan child is created and database integrity is compromised. If the delete is rejected, some security people might say, oh, LBAC read access rule have not been observed. So this really illustrates that referential integrity and LBAC can be thought as of two conflicting requirements to satisfy one of the database. And moving to chart 23, we have come up with rules to ensure that the database integrity is never sacrificed. It must always be maintained, because that's a fundamental relational database concept. So basically here, these are the rules that are observed. So whenever the LBAC read access rules will not be applied for internally generated scan of child tables. The LBAC read access rules are not also applied for internally generated scan of parent tables. The write rules, however, are applied, for example, when a cascade operation is performed on child tables. For instance, if a user deletes the parent but cannot delete any of the children because of an LBAC write rule violation, the delete will fail and an error will be raised. So just to summarize what I was trying to say here is that LBAC is applied for scans that are for answering queries or for enforcing user access. But when it comes to internal scans done by DB2 for its own housekeeping, these are what we call internally generated scans, LBAC is not applied. I'm moving to chart 24, and this is another example showing that if one is not careful in applying in designing LBAC, it can lead to trouble. So suppose that a user Bob attempts to define a check constraint on a protected table T1, but not all rows in that table are visible to user Bob according to the LBAC read access rules. Obviously, if the check constraint is allowed, database integrity has been compromised. So here again, the Al-Bath deductive rules are not applied when validating check constraints. The same thing for primary and unique key constraints. In general, the Al-Bath read access rules are not applied for any internal scan generated by the database for its own internal housekeeping. And the goal there is to maintain the integrity of the database. I'm moving to chart number 25. And this is an interesting example. So suppose we have a unique constraint, a primary key or a unique index constraint on a protected table with rollover granularity. Users may be able to infer the value of primary key columns at higher security levels if an insert is rejected due to primary key constraint violation. So for instance, suppose that you do select star and there is no row. You are a sensitive person. And then you try to insert a row with a sensitive label, and the primary key for that row is A, and then you suddenly get an error saying that there is a row that exists, and you say I could not see it. So you could potentially infer that there is a row with the same primary key that you are inserting, but it's at a higher security level. You cannot see it. So there are customers who may or may not regard this problem as important. But for those that regard the problem as important, the recommendation here is if the inference problem is a concern to you, you may want to include the DB2 security label column in your primary key or your index key definition, and this problem will go away. Okay, I'm now moving to chart number 26. And let's talk about some of the query optimization things. So, traditionally, the query optimizer can choose between three options about how to access a table: a table scan, an iScan fetch, accessing a table through an index, or an iScan. Now, there can be a problem if an index-only plan is chosen for accessing a protected table with row-level granularity, and this is important, and the row security label column is not part of that index key. So basically, you would be bypassing LBAC and would be a problem. The DB2 LBAC implementation will never choose an index-only plan if the LBAC rule can be compromised. In other words, as long as your index contains the label column and the optimizer chooses for according to the optimization that it does that an index-only plan is reasonable, then it will pick it. But if the label column is not there, it will not be picked because that would be compromising the LBAC rules. The way predicates are evaluated can also lead into some interesting problems. And this is one way to illustrate it. So suppose that you have a query, and that query involves a user-defined function that takes the whole data row as input parameter, and that the UDF source code makes a copy of the data row outside the database or send it through an email or something. Now suppose that there is some data row that cannot be returned to the user because this would violate the LBAC access rules. The key observation here is that if the predicate involving the UDF is evaluated prior to the LBAC rules, then this row will be consumed by the UDF, and by the time we realize that this row should not be returned, it's already too late, the row has gone and may have left the database altogether. In the DB2 LBAC implementation, we carefully distinguish between safe predicate and non-safe predicate, and this situation can never happen with the DB2 LBAC rule, with the DB2 LBAC implementation. In other words, this scenario that I just explained will never occur in the DB2 LBAC implementation because we carefully distinguish between safe and unsafe predicates. Okay, I'm moving to chart number 27, which says LBAC and data partitioning. So as I'm sure you all know, the DB2 Viper DB2.9 introduces a new feature that is called partition table, which allows table data to be spread across different partitions according to some user-defined partitioning scheme. Well, LBAC and partition table can be combined to, for example, increase the security through separation of data from different security levels. So for instance, you might choose to put your highly sensitive data on partition A, your sensitive data on partition B, and your public data on partition D, because you believe that, you know, the partition A is more secure than the other partition, so I'm going to put my highly sensitive data in there. And as you also know, there are other data partitioning features that that exist in DB2 since prior releases, and one of them is multidimensional clustering. And multidimensional clustering can also be combined with LBAC to offer the same flexibility. So you can include the labeled column in your dimension column, and you will actually benefit both in terms of security, but you will also benefit from a performance perspective because of partition elimination. So when a partition does not satisfy the user query, it will not be, the rows in there will not be looked at, and you know, you will gain in terms of performance as well. And the last data last partitioning feature is DPF, the data partitioning facility. And with DPF comes really performance from parallel query execution, and also increased security through physical separation of data from different security levels. So in high assurance government organization, this is something that is very important, because you really, really combine the access control and with physical separation of data. So you might have a node in that configuration that, you know, for whatever reason is much more secure than all the other nodes, because, you know, of the location where it is, or because of the features on that node, etc. So you can choose to have your, say, top secret or highly sensitive data on that node. So basically you can combine LBAC and data partitioning capabilities in DB2 to get both better performance and increased security through physical separation of data from different security levels. Okay, moving to chart number 28. And on 28, this is really the third part. So I remember at the beginning I mentioned there are three parts. The first is sort of an overview of LBAC, how it is set up and how it works. The second is the how it integrates with other database functionalities. And the third part is the security model, the extensions that we have made to the DB2 security model. And the first extension is the introduction of the Security Administrator Authority. So this is a new authority, and really this is for for separation of duties to have better security. So for instance, the granting of security labels to users can only be done by the security administrator. And for instance, your database administrator cannot access data unless the security administrator grants them a security label, and they can only access what that security label allows them to access. So really this is for separation of duties. And an interesting observation here is that the security administrator cannot grant any privilege to himself either. So if there is a business reason for a security administrator to have to hold security labels, there must be a second security administrator who grants them that ability. The second extension is what we call the set session user privilege. So this is the privilege required to change the session authorization ID to a different authorization ID. In the previous model, it used to be that anyone with a database administrator authority can change the session authorization ID to any authorization ID of their choice. And this basically, if we did not change this, this would be the easiest way for the database administrator to say, hey, I can bypass the LBAC rule, and it's very easy. If I can just assume the identity of somebody who has LBAC credentials, that's my way to get at the data. So in DB2.9, the DBAdm no longer has this inherent capability, and they need to hold the set session user privilege to be able to change the session authorization ID to a specific ID. And the set session user privilege is granular in the sense that you can say, I allow you to become Bob and Joe, but you will not be able to become Alice, for example. And the last extension that we have made is to the create database command. So traditionally when you create a database, there are a number of things that happen, and one of them is the creation of the system catalog tables. And as you, I'm sure you know, the system catalog tables contain a number of information, and some of that information is statistics that is used by the query optimizer for doing its optimization job. And some of these statistics can contain data values like, you know, the high to key, the low to key, and the frequent data values and the histograms. So, because when you create a database, access to this catalog is granted to public, so some people can just select from the catalog and can get some ideas about data that is protected with LBAC. So, to avoid this problem, we have extended the create database command with a new option that is called restrict. Basically, that will ensure that when the system catalogs are created, access to them is not granted to public, which means that if somebody requires access to the catalog, they must be granted that explicitly. So access to get to the catalog will then need to be granted on a need-to-know basis. Okay, I'm now on chart 31, which is the summary. And so what are the advantages of the DB2L back capability? So the first advantage is column level labeling. So this is, we believe, is a unique feature that is not available in other implementations, and it works independently of row level labeling. And as we have seen, the column level labeling capability can be used to simulate table level labeling, as we have seen in an example earlier, and this provides better performance storage saving. There is a flexibility and of the security policy definition, and this is really the novelty compared to multi-level security implementation. So the security administrator can define the security policy that suits them best. They can choose from the predefined security label components, arrays, sets, and trees to define the structure of the security label that best meets their needs. And the security label, as we are saying, can have, you know, any number of components of any type, not just the hardwired level and compartments with MLS implementation. And I'm moving to chart number 32. There is also the flexibility of security label to user assignment. So as I mentioned, you can grant somebody a security label for read access or just for write access. For instance, somebody, their job is to just generate a report, you grant them a security label for read access. If their job is, you know, to load data, you can just send a security label for write access. There is also a sort of a database level fine granularity, because we allow you to create different security policies, so you can have different tables within the database protected with different security policies. And we also use the security label encoding idea that I mentioned earlier, which basically allows DB2 to be very efficient when it is enforcing the LBAC rules. And chart 33, so these are just some points to consider. So for instance, if you are dealing with data that is, you know, highly sensitive, you may want to choose to create your database with the new restrict option to, you know, prevent access to the catalog to be granted to public. Determine who should be your security administrator and vest that authority in them. Determine how you would like to label your data. Maybe you just, you know, need one component or two components, etc., depending on your application scenario. Determine who should be granted security label and who optionally should also be granted exemption. And, you know, have your security administrator set up the policy and grant the credentials in terms of labels and exemptions to those users. And determine whether you need LBAC at the row level or the column level or the simulated table level labeling. Then create your tables with the level of granularity needed. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to the operator.
At this time, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key followed by the number on your phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll go to our first question. What is your preferred start time for the chat with the lab call? Press star 1 for 11 a.m. Eastern. press star 2 for 1 p.m. Eastern. Again, what is your preferred start time for the Chat with Labs call? Press star 1 for 11 a.m. Eastern. Press star 2 for 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal. Question number 2. Would you attend a DB2 chat on DB29 and SAP? Press star 1 for yes. Press star 2 for no. Again, would you attend a DB2 chat on DB29 and SAP? Star 1 for yes. Star 2 for no. We'll allow everyone a chance to signal. Question number 3. The level of technical detail in this presentation was: press star 1 for about right, press star 2 for not technical enough, press star 3 for too technical. Again, the level of technical detail in this presentation was: press star 1 for about right, press star 2 for not technical enough, press star 3 for too technical. And we'll pause to allow everyone a chance to signal. Question number 4. Please give the overall teleconference rating. Star 1 for excellent. Star 2 for good. Press star 3 for fair. And star 4 for poor. Again, please give the overall teleconference rating. Star 1 for excellent. Star 2 for good. Star 3 for fair. Star 4 for poor. And we'll pause for a moment. Question number 5. Would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding DB29? Press star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding DB29? It's star 1 for yes or star 2 for no. And we'll pause for a moment. Question number 6. Would you like to be contacted about joining the International DB2 User Group? Press star 1 for yes. Press star 2 for no. Again, would you like to be contacted about joining the International DB2 User Group? It's star 1 for yes. Star 2 for no. We'll pause for a moment. That does conclude our electronic survey. At this time, we will conduct an electronic question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. Again, if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star 1 at this time if you'd like to ask a question. We'll have our first question from Steve Westfall.
Hi, a couple questions. Is it possible to distinguish between insert and update and delete authority? It sounds like it's not that granular. You only distinguish between read and write in your LBAC approach. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct. So insert, update, and delete will obey the write rules.
Okay. So if you wanted to allow someone, for example, to insert data but not to have the authority to delete data, you'd have to find a different way to accomplish that.
You could choose not to grant them the delete privilege on the table altogether.
I see. And then what effect, if any, does this give on your ability to use database maintenance utilities, for example, the export utility, backup, and so on?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So for utilities like export, so as you do know, export basically exports using a query. So you say export from this table, select, you know, this query. So that export will obey the LBAC rule.
Okay.
So if the table is protected with LBAC, and you say, for example, export select star from T, and you can only see 10% of the rows, you will actually get 10% exported.
I see.
Yeah.
And then finally, has the control center been updated so that you can use it to apply LBAC security like you can regular security?
Unfortunately, I don't believe it has been updated to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
You are welcome.
We'll have our next question from Jeremy Dodd.
Hello?
Delete and cascade. Whether or not, does it make a little difference if you've got not enforced RI?
I think I missed at the beginning of the question, sir.
Sorry. Does it make a difference on my if I've got RI on tables,
right,
if I do not enforce the RI?
Does it make a difference if you do not enforce the RI?
Yes. On slide 23, you were saying that LBAC write rules are applied when a cascade operation is performed.
That's right.
But if I don't enforce it, I would imagine that you can still delete a parent. Is that true or not?
If you do not enforce it,
in version 8, there was introduced an opportunity to enforce or not enforce RI.
I'm not familiar with that option, so
right.
I don't want to give a false response here.
Okay, I'll follow that one up. The other thing is, does this have any impact on the ability to explain queries?
When you explain the query, so basically the way LBAC is implemented is through query modification.
Yeah.
Right. So you send the query like, you know, select A from T. And we internally will transform that query into select A from T, and then there will be a where predicate, and there will be an LBAC enforcement function.
Okay.
So if you do see the if you do select A from T and you do an explain, you will see that in the explain shows you that additional predicate.
Right, but if I've not got security to actually read the data, will I be able to explain a query that would allow me to read the data?
Yes, because, you know, you are just explaining the plan.
I'm just explaining the plan, so yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
You are welcome.
We'll have our next question from Bill Schatz.
Hi, your access seems to be tied to the username used to connect to the database. So how do you handle SOA or end-tier implementations where all sessions connect to the database using the same username out of the same connection pool?
That's a very good question. So basically what is needed here is an additional capability to go with LBAC to give you the answer you are looking for. So there is a need for a feature that allow the middle tier to assert the identity of the new user, right?
That's correct.
Exactly. So in DB2 version 9, we do not have a ability to do so. The only option available at this point is the set session authorization statement. So the middle tier can probably take advantage of that to change the session authorization to the new user. And therefore, the LBAC that will be executed, the LBAC enforcement that will happen after that will be based on this new value for the session authorization. Although, if you look at our documentation for the set session authorization statement, we do mention that it is not really the 100% answer for the identity assertion problem.
Okay, I did have a second question.
Sure.
You said you can do this at time of table creation. Can you also alter tables to add security at a later date, either row, column, or overall table?
That's also a very good question, yes. So, for example, you have a table and you would like to make that table protected with LBAC at the row level. So you alter the table and you add a new column that will be your row security label column, and you attach the security policy just like you saw for the create. The thing that is important to mention here is that when you are doing so, there needs to be a value set for that new column that you just added. And the value is the value of the person doing the alter. So the rows will be labeled with a default label that is the label of the person who did the alter.
Okay, thank you.
And the other question that you asked for columns, yes, you can alter a table to add a label to a column or remove a label from a column.
We'll have our next question from Pong Chen.
Hey. I have a requirement from our DBA to show all the application labels name in the catalog view. So we use the security label by name function and join the label and the policy catalog view together. But it seems that the security label by name function only accepts a fixed string for the policy name. If we pass the security policy catalog view column name into this function, it fails all the time. Do you know this is a problem DB2 Viper or DB2 by design?
I'm not sure I understood the question. So you said the sec label by name function, and
yes.
What are you trying to do with the sec label by name function?
The security label by name function, the first parameter is the policy name, the security policy name.
That's right.
If we pass a fixed string to this parameter, it works fine. But
okay.
If we join the policy catalog view and pass the policy name from that view to this function, it doesn't work.
Okay. Could you send me an email about this so that I can take a closer look at this and get back to you with the proper answer?
Okay. Cool.
My email is on the chart, at the last chart.
Okay. Thank you.
You are welcome.
We'll have our next question from Junie Shong.
Wani Shong.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. This is Wani Shong. I have quick question. Earlier you mentioned that there's a performance implication if we apply label on the row level. So I'm just wondering, does IBM have any statistics on how much slowdown we are talking about here? And also, do they have anything to do with the performance degradation have anything to do according to a different type of the label that's applied, whether it's array, set, tree?
Okay, that's a very good question. So we have been working with one of our customers who have done some extensive testing with LBAC to specifically see the delta increase, the performance slowdown that you have mentioned, and we will be showing those results next week at IOD. So if you are attending IOD, you will see them there. If you are not attending IOD, please send me an email. I can send you the chart showing all the information about this performance testing. And just to summarize, the customer has really been pleased with the performance numbers they saw. So basically, the performance slowdown was very reasonable. You're welcome.
We'll go next to Daniel Uno.
Yes, my question was asked by a previous gentleman. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, it's star one for questions. We'll go now to Eric White.
Quick question. Everything throughout your presentation references user IDs. What about groups?
That's a very good question. So in DB2.9, unfortunately, you cannot grant labels and exemptions to groups. this is something that we are thinking about. It's not, as you know, the usual answer is not officially committed to any future release plan, though just we are thinking about, and we know that it is important to some of our customers to be able to grant labels to groups and to roles.
Thanks.
But yeah, you are welcome.
We'll go next to Kishore Lengamalu.
Hi.
Hi.
The question I have is, you know, if we have this data in one of the environment and we want to migrate the data to the other environment, is it possible to do it?
To migrate the data to other environments, meaning
copy
you are just
data.
Doing a normal DB2 migration?
Copy the data.
Okay, so I think the answer to the question is needs to be a little elaborate. So you mentioned copying the data, so you are moving the data from one location to another location. And let's step back a little bit here and forget about LBAC. So the moment you start moving data from a location A to a location B, if you do care about security, you need to ensure that the new location B is at least as secure as location A, whether LBAC is involved or not. Okay? So for instance, if you have, you know, a protected table in one database, and you have all the credentials that allow you to access all the content of that table, so you access that content and you go and you replicate that table somewhere else, obviously if that somewhere else is not as protected as the original location, you know, your data is vulnerable. So when you are copying data, you need to ensure that, you know, the security policy also travels with the data, or at least the security policy is set up on that target data, on that target location.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, yeah, so basically the target also should have the same security policy.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll go next to Robert Gaylord.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. I have a follow-up. My question was originally about performance, and can you put any metrics on the performance degradation?
Okay, so as I said, I hope you will be attending IOD because we have a very elaborate presentation on that, on the performance numbers. But just to sort of give you an idea, so the observation, what we have observed is that for queries that, you know, do not return data or complete, you know, in a few milliseconds, in terms of percentage, the percentage slowdown appears to be, you know, high, but these are queries that complete in few, you know, in few milliseconds. For queries that, you know, complete in, you know, reasonable time, the performance degradation due to LBAC does not appear huge. So we have seen things in the, you know, the 5 to 7% slowdown.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll go next to Sadish Kumar.
Hi, do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I have two questions. One is, how do redirect restore works or DB2 move works in this case, whether the security policy also will be restored?
Okay, you are talking about, you know, restoring from a backup?
Yeah.
Yes, the security policy will be restored because the backup basically backs the catalogs as well, and the security policy definition is stored in the catalog, so it will be restored.
Okay, the second question is, how do LBAC works on a federated table or nickname?
Okay, so that's a good question. So in DB2.9, we do not allow you to protect a nickname with LBAC.
Okay.
Because the nickname does not really contain any data. And from a security perspective, data is always best protected where it resides. So if you have a federation and, you know, the remote source A has a table that has sensitive data, you better protect that data at that location.
Oh, okay.
So when somebody is accessing that remote table through a nickname from another source, when they get there to that remote location, they will obey the security policy of the remote location.
Okay, and I have, sorry, I have one more question.
Yes.
How do DB2 look and DB2 dot utility perform, whether I have to be a DB Adam or a SysAdam to run?
Okay, so DB2 look has been extended so that you can generate the DDL that was used for, say, creating the security label components and policy and things like that. So, for instance, if you want, you know, to replicate, like the question that asked by the person earlier, you want to replicate the security policy on another location,
it
would be great if you don't have to rewrite the script from start, right? So you can use DB2Look to extract the DDL that you use it to create the LBAC objects on that database, and you take it to that other database and you just run it and it will create the same thing for you. So DB2Look, yes, has been extended to generate that, and there are no additional privileges required because you are not really reading sensitive information, you are just generating DDL for objects, right? So there is no additional privilege requirement. Other utilities, I guess you talk about, you mean export and import and load and things like that?
No, I talked about DB2 dot. See, for example, I was checking the integrity of the database.
Yeah, so DB2 dot, I think this is a utility that works at the DMS level, at the data storage level.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have any LBAC enforcement in there. In fact, if you look at our documentation, there is a section called security consideration, and I think we mentioned in there that DB2 dot does not enforce LBAC or anything like that.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll go next to Saeed Mudassar.
Yes, my question is, do you see any performance impact while migrating the version 8 databases to version 9 because of this LBAC situation?
No, I mean, when you are migrating from 8 to 9, there is really no LBAC involved here, right? So there will be normal catalog migration, which will result in creating additional catalogs that are used by LBAC. But aside from that, you know, there is really nothing else.
And there should not be any disk increase requirements, like, in terms of capacity?
Well, I mean, like with any migration to a subsequent release, generally, there are more catalog tables that are introduced, and so there will be additional space to hold those additional catalogs. Right? But for LBAC, for example, when you create them, they will all be empty because you have not created any LBAC object anyway.
All right, thank you.
You are welcome.
We'll go now to Umair Hussain.
Hi, can LBAC be applied to views?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So, as I mentioned earlier, LBAC is applied at the base table level. It's protecting data where it actually resides, which means that no matter how that data is accessed, LBAC will be enforced. So, if you just do select star from the table, LBAC will be enforced. If you access the table through a view or through, you know, a nested level of views, the moment you touch the table that is protected with LBAC, LBAC will be enforced. So you cannot associate LBAC protection with a view. It has to be with a base table because the view does not really contain data.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
We'll go now to Michael Nicolopoulo.
Hi, this is Mika Nicolopoulo. My question is, when you want to move a database, somebody already asked it, but I was not sure. I wanted to ask furthermore, when you want to move a database from one site to another where there is development, application developers will want to work on it, but, and you want to protect the database, especially if it has sensitive data, you apply LBAC there. How does this affect application development, for example, the ability, of course, to view data, but also to do functions and other things? Is this, what is the appropriate strategy for such
a
setup?
So you mentioned that you have sensitive data, but at the same time you said that you would like your developers to have access to the data. So that data is not really sensitive, right? If it is viewed by developers?
Yes, some data are sensitive. For example, one column, but the rest they can view. So
okay, so if it is one column that is sensitive, then you can choose to just attach a label with that column, with the appropriate, you know, label value, and no one can access that column unless you have granted them a label or an exemption that allows them to do so. But the other columns will be accessible to the users in the usual way because they are not protected with LDAP.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was more looking for side effects. You know, how this can affect application development, because probably they will want to be able to manipulate everything.
Yeah, I mean, they will be affected. For instance, like the example you just mentioned. So if you have somebody using an application A that is selecting columns A, B, C from table T1, and you say, I'm going to protect column A, now when that application comes and tries to select, and the user does not have access to column A, they will get an authorization error. Mm-hmm. So they will be affected if you do that.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome.
Just a reminder, it is star one for questions. We'll go now to Vikram Khatri.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to ask you one question about the virtual private database. Can we do VPD with the help of label-based access security?
Okay, that's also a very good question. So the LBAC solution should not be compared with Oracle's virtual private database. It should rather be compared with Oracle's label security. Okay? So VPD is what I would call fine-grained access control based on user-supplied predicates, right? LBAC is access control based on security labels. So LBAC is the equivalent of Oracle label security, not VPD.
So what would be the equivalent of VPD in DB2 then?
It is probably something that may or may not come up in the future. I cannot comment on future work, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
And at this time, we have no further questions in the queue. Mr. Rajabi, I'll turn it back over to you for any closing remarks you may have.
I would like to thank the audience for their questions. I really appreciated the large number of questions and the interest in the LBAC capability, and I really hope that the presentation met their expectations. And please, if there are any questions that you have, my email is on the chat. Please do send me email. And once again, thank you very much for attending the presentation.
That does conclude today's DB2 Chat with the Lab series conference call. You may disconnect at this time. We do appreciate your participation.